And to me, helping people understand that you cannot lead with honor without courage. And courage is leaning into the pain of your fear and doing what you know you ought to do, even though you may be scared.
With Veterans Day soon upon us, we'll meet a former POW today on First Person. Welcome, I'm Wayne Shepherd, and our guest today spent over 5 years in a Vietnamese prison camp. You'll hear Lee Ellis tell his story on First Person. By the end of today's conversation, you may want to know more about our guest and his book on leadership. You'll find links at firstpersoninterview.com, along with a schedule of upcoming interviews and an archive of past interviews to listen to at your convenience. Once again, it's all at firstpersoninterview.com. Or visit our Facebook page, facebook.com/firstpersoninterview. In 1965, Lee Ellis began a career in the Air Force. During the Vietnam War, his aircraft was shot down over enemy territory, and he became a prisoner of war. He was held in various prisons in the Hanoi area over 5 years. Afterwards, he returned to flying duties with increasing positions of leadership before retiring as a colonel. He was awarded 2 Silver Stars, the Legion of Merit, the Bronze Star with Valor Device, the Purple Heart, and POW Medal for his service in Vietnam. I met with Lee in Atlanta, Georgia, and asked him if he always wanted to be a pilot.
Yes, I did always want to be a fighter pilot. When I was 5 years old, my family took me down to the Veterans Park in Athens, Georgia, and I climbed up on a World War II fighter plane. And it's like, from that moment on, this
That's
is where
took.
I belong. So I never gave up that dream. And in the eighth grade, I recall I sat in my homeroom was in the library, and I sat next to the aides, it turned out. So every morning for 15 minutes, I would pull out aircraft, aerodynamics, aeronautical engineering, and I would just flip through those books and read. So I was just building a foundation about what I wanted to do in the future. And it was just a passion that when I got to the University of Georgia, I got in Air Force ROTC, and from there it was it all just worked out.
Isn't it amazing how God prepares a life for what's to come down the road?
It really is, and I guess as I'd played sports, I'd went to a small school and played and lettered in 4 sports, so I was competitive and kind of a warrior in ways, you know, physically and so on. So being a part of the military felt good to me. It felt natural, and flying was I'd been a hunter and outdoors person, so it gave me that outdoors on steroids.
Mm-hmm. I can only imagine how rigorous the training is, though, what you went through. And this is what time period? This is before the Vietnam War, obviously.
Well, I went into Air Force 1965, right out of college.
Okay.
And 3 days after I graduated, I was in flight school. And 53 weeks later, I had my wings and an assignment that was F-4C Phantom Pipeline Southeast Asia, which meant as fast as they could get you combat qualified, I would be headed to the war.
That's the world that we were living in at that time, wasn't it? Yeah. Were you fearful about that assignment?
No, I really wasn't. I felt like I was going to be well prepared for it, and I knew others that had been and gone through it, and I heard about some who didn't make it, so I knew there was real risk there, and there's danger. So there's a little bit of not fear, but just awareness that this is for real. This, you know, combat is going to be for real, and it's not going to be playing games.
So you find yourself in Vietnam flying missions.
Yes.
In what year?
I got there in July of 1967.
Okay.
And I had flown over the, I was flying regularly, often, some missions in South Vietnam in support of the Army and the Marine Corps, close air support, and some in Laos, interdiction of trucks and bridges and that sort of thing to stop the flow of traffic from the north. But mainly over the southern part of North Vietnam, flying up and down the roads and waterways, looking for trucks and trying to stop all the movement of material, war materials into South Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. So help me understand, what's the level of, I mean, are you taking fire at that point when you're flying that kind of mission, or?
We took fire on most missions. I was hit a couple of times, just a little bullet hole in the wing, that sort of thing.
That'll make you stop and think,
I bet. You know, you come back and you say, well, they missed, they didn't get me.
Of course, you're a fighter pilot,
right.
So Top Gun, right?
Well, the thing is, I had lost a couple of friends before I went down.
Mm.
So I knew it was real, and the reality of going down was there. But you feel pretty safe in your own airplane. Mm-hmm. You know, you feel like you're in control of mm-hmm. things. And, of course, fighter pilots like to be in control.
Yeah, sort of that invincibility feeling.
Right. Mm-hmm. We felt like we were in control. The particular day that I went down, we were attacking some gun sites on the ground, and there was a lot of shooting that day because they were shooting at us as we came down the bombing dive. A lot of tracers, a lot of flak. And then something happened right after we dropped our bombs, whatever it was. Our wingman said we were hit. Anyway, it blew into several pieces. Hmm. Fortunately, the cockpit stayed intact, and everything in it worked for the ejection process. Mm-hmm. And my partner and I in the front seat, I was the junior birdman in the back right out of flight school, and we were both pilots, but we both were able to eject safely. We didn't even have communication. It was the airplane wasn't flying. It was really tumbling.
So there you are. You find yourself on the ground after ejecting.
Yes.
And things got rather dicey for you, didn't they?
Well, they did. I was had a good parachute descent. It wasn't a very long one, but I had a good one.
Were you conscious and thinking?
Oh, yeah. I was working like I was in the office working in a crisis, but I was working, checking my parachute, activating my beeper, making decisions about whether or not I would activate my life preserver, and slipping my parachute, trying to get to a good landing zone away from the enemy, all those kinds of things. But once I got on the ground, they were within 20 yards of me instantly and surrounded me. So there really wasn't a chance to get away. I made one radio call to my wingman and said, hey, I'm on the ground. Start strafing. Mm-hmm. 400 meters north to the river. I'm headed south to the river. But after the war, they said, we can't shoot that accurately. They were too close to you.
Yeah.
So
you had no chance.
No, I had no chance to get away. I really didn't.
Well, the whole story is told in your book, Leading with Honor, and I do want to recommend that to our listeners, and I will only hit the very sketchiest of details here today with you, Lee, because I also want to talk about how God is moving in your life today. But
right.
Were you a Christian, by the way, at this time?
Yes, I was. I grew up in a Christian home, and what a glorious heritage that was, and to grow up in a family where we read the Bible together, we prayed together, we went to church usually 2-3 times a week. And I had even spoken on Youth Day. I'd preached a sermon, you know. So I knew that God had his hand on my life. I always felt God's presence in my life, and I always felt blessed and guided by God. And I just felt like he was there and he had a purpose for my life.
Yeah. Well, that faith had to sustain you because you found yourself a POW in the hands of the North Vietnamese for how long?
5 years, 4 months, and 2 weeks. Almost 5.5 years.
Wow. That's inconceivable to any one of us who has never gone through something like that.
Well, it's almost inconceivable to me, except that we did it. And some guys were there much longer. I felt like I was probably the youngest POW in most of the time in most of the camps and the junior ranking. So, and there were some guys who had been there 2 years when I got there. So some were there 7 to 8 years. Mm. In chapter one of the book, I talk about know yourself. I knew who I was in Christ. I knew I was solid in that I knew my purpose in life was to honor my Heavenly Father and to represent Him on this earth. And that my goal, understanding my goal of as a military person, was to live up to my duty and represent my country well. And so those kind of things, being grounded in those kind of things, really helped me sustain my faith and my service over those years.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were in the Hanoi Hilton, but that wasn't the only place that
right.
you were.
I started out there and spent 9 months there in a cell that was 6.5 by 7 feet, about the size of a small bathroom. Hmm. Well, it was our bathroom.
Yeah.
We had a 3.5-gallon bucket. Fortunately, it had a lid, but it was our bedroom, our dining room, and our living room for the next 9 months. Four of us in that little cell.
Talk about the communication that you had with each other. I mean, you're in individual cells.
Right.
But you found a way to communicate?
Well, we didn't have any initially because it was a maximum security cell with no walls touching. But eventually, some guy got up under our window and passed us the tap code, which was a 5x5 matrix. You go down and then across, so you tap the down and then you tap the across. So high would be HI would be down 2 and over 3 for the H and down 2 and over 4 for the I. Huh. So it was two, three, 6-2-4, H-I, in the 5-by-5 matrix.
And that's the way you communicated to your cellmates?
Yes. Well, to the people next door.
Okay.
For many years, that's how we communicated to the people next door.
Did it get passed on down the...
Yes, and it would be passed down, you know, like the old gossip thing. Of course, by the time it gets down to the end, it gets turned around a little bit sometimes. So you have to over-communicate.
Yeah.
And that's one of the points in the book, is you have to over-communicate.
Yeah. I'm sure it taught you how to be brief with your communication, too, right? Otherwise, your knuckles will get raw.
Exactly. And you know what, Wayne? We had texting shortcuts 35 years before cell phones, let alone texting. What was WT, that is TT, then is TN. So we had shortcuts way back then.
How bad did it get for you, Lee?
Well, those first few months, I call it confront your doubts and fears. And there were doubts and fears because they were threatening us with war crimes trials every day. We had a speaker in our cell. Three times a day we got propaganda, but we also got a lot of threats. And you either go this way and join us, or you go the other way and we're going to try you and you may never go home. So that was pretty serious.
We'll continue talking with Lee Ellis and learn lessons of leadership today here on First Person. First Person has partnered with Mission Aviation Fellowship to make available to you a free copy of the classic book, Jungle Pilot, telling the life story of early missionary aviation pilot Nate Saint and the pioneering work of MAF. I've narrated this special audio edition of Jungle Pilot, and a free download is available at firstpersoninterview.com. Your whole family will enjoy listening to Jungle Pilot. To download, visit firstpersoninterview.com.
My guest on First Person today is Lee Ellis, the author of Leading with Honor, Leadership Lessons from the Hanoi Hilton. Lee, as we've talked about today, was a prisoner during the Vietnam War, a prisoner of war of the North Vietnamese. And those lessons, painful as they were, have led to an interesting life for you, Lee. And I want to go back, though, and talk about this forgiveness issue.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be, you know, we all have to forgive at one level or another, but yours was a particularly difficult test.
Yeah. I would say that anger was one of the key motivators for us every day because they tried to dehumanize us. They wanted to destroy our morale and to destroy our personal self-confidence. So that was part of the drill there, to demoralize us. And so we fought back, and there was a lot of anger about that, anger about communism, sometimes anger about a particular guard who was so treated us so badly or whatever. But over time, eventually the treatment did improve some, and thanks to a big effort by people back home to bring to light the bad treatment and the lack of meeting international requirements.
Did you ever feel like you'd been forgotten?
I never felt like I was forgotten, but I felt like definitely we were on the back burner because Lyndon Johnson, President Johnson, stopped the bombing in 1968, and we didn't hear any bombs fall in Hanoi for 3 years, and that was a little discouraging.
Hmm.
It's like they're sitting up here in Hanoi enjoying life. Yeah. And
as long as you heard the bombs drop, you knew something
right,
was going on.
That's right, and so we didn't feel good about that.
Yeah, we have to understand, you were cut off. I mean, you didn't know really anything, did you?
The only thing we knew was what they wanted us to know. So they told us anything bad. Like we knew that Martin Luther King had been assassinated. We knew that Bobby Kennedy had been assassinated. So they told us the bad news. We knew about the anti-war demonstrations, which, by the way, we defended as saying that's what makes us different from you. That's why we're over here.
Okay.
We support the right for them to protest the war. That's the kind of country we are. That's mm-hmm. what makes us great.
Mm-hmm.
But We had some anger and bitterness, no question about it. But as the treatment started to go more to live and let live, we had time to really process and think about what we wanted to be like when we came home. And so I think most of us started really working on turning loose of the anger, turning loose of the bitterness, realizing that, you know, bitterness ruins. It hurts the person who's bitter. It doesn't hurt the other person.
You're drinking the poison yourself.
That's right. Yeah. You're drinking the poison. So I think we worked very hard to forgive and to recognize that we were actually very blessed to be walking out of there and coming home.
Hmm. Talk about liberation.
Liberation is a big thing when you've been locked up 5.5 years. And went years, I didn't see the sunrise or the stars. And that in itself was painful for me because I'm an outdoors person. It was everything I expected to be. There were some disappointments in the culture. That, you know, there were no drugs in my little hometown in Commerce, Georgia when I left to go overseas, and they were in the middle school when I came home. Mm. So that was disappointing. But overall, the idea of coming home and being free again and actually experiencing that was very powerful.
How do you characterize the transition period from the point of release and getting on that plane in Vietnam mm-hmm. to a year or more later? What was that time period like for you?
I was very focused in many ways. I had developed strong ability to focus in the POW camp, which I had not had before. Hmm. I really learned to hyper-focus on things that I didn't want to do. I could always focus on the things I wanted to do. And that was that mental discipline served me well when we came home. The hardest problem I had in adjustment was just keeping up with stuff because I'd had no stuff for a long time. Now I've got sunglasses and car keys and all sorts of stuff to keep up with.
Did it ever become overwhelming?
It did. When I first went back to work, I remember going down to a place like a Lowe's or a Walmart. I think it was prior to them even existing, but I was looking for some shelving for my stereo stuff. And I was overwhelmed with all the decisions, all the possibilities mm-hmm. that I walked out of there. And I said, I can't make a decision. Mm-hmm. There's just too many options mm-hmm. here. And that was I thought there might be something wrong with me. And I talked to some of my buddies and they said, no, we're having the same problem. Mm-hmm. We haven't made a lot of decisions mm-hmm. in the last few years.
Mm-hmm. Lee, take a moment and characterize spiritually the transition for you. And looking back on that whole experience now, what was that all about? And what was God doing?
I had a lot of time to reflect, and some of the things I saw as I reflected back in myself, and I have a pretty high ego, you know, fighter pilots are known for being pretty confident, but as I reflected in that cell, I was able to go back and see times when I had not been the person that I really wanted to be. I wasn't living always the life that I wanted to live in my responsibilities as a Christian, as a person. So I made some commitments about that and how I wanted to live and how I would live. I also, we didn't have a Bible all those years, and even though we asked for them weekly almost, we would bug them on that, and they were terrified of religion. They wouldn't give us one. And finally, they let us read one for a couple hours on Saturday. One person out of the cell could go read it and take some notes. Hmm. So they did that for a while, and then they quit that. But one of my commitments was to read the Bible regularly. And I did, and I have all these years. I read it through five times just reading in a year. I would read the Bible through in a year. I've done that about four or five times. And then, but I just read regular and have my devotionals and prayer time. And
so you don't take it for granted anymore.
No, I don't. I really don't. And I need that. I need that daily feeding, that daily connection. And now in the last few years, I've learned through a ministry I'm involved in how to really experience God's love. I knew it in my head, but now I've learned to experience it in my emotions. And that's been so wonderful and powerful.
Hmm. Now God is using you in a completely different way, but mm-hmm. you're drawing upon that experience, aren't you?
Yes, I am. The book Leading with Honor, that title, I'm concerned about leadership overall in the country and how people don't do what they know they ought to do. I think leading with honor, first and foremost, is doing what you know you ought to do. You know, we know we have the Ten Commandments. We are taught at home. We're taught at school. We have laws, and we have professional ethics, and it goes on and on. We're Boy Scouts, you know, the Rotary. Everybody has a creed and a code. Mm-hmm. So we know what to do. But out of fear, usually out of fear, people, sometimes greed, but fear, people don't do what they know they ought to do, and then we all suffer for it. And to me, helping people understand that you cannot lead with honor without courage. And courage is leaning into the pain of your fear and doing what you know you ought to do, even though you may be scared.
Hmm. Well, I can think of no one more qualified to address that than you, given what you've been through and how God has prepared your own heart, Lee. What kind of audiences do you speak to then?
All kinds. Interesting, this message in this book, even the whole idea, I think the stories are so compelling that what we went through, people want to know about that. And then they're also interested in the lessons for their own application. So it's I've spoken to nurses between 40 and 50 years old, and they are interested in the story, and grandmothers that are interested in the story. CEOs, I've got a number of CEOs have endorsed the book, and they bring me in to speak. General officers, next week I'm flying to Tucson, and the three-star general there of 12th Air Force has invited me to speak at their heritage celebration. So it varies.
Mm-hmm. So do you maintain an active ministry with the military at all?
I don't really have a ministry, but I do go and speak.
Okay.
So I'm not involved in ministry, but I do get to speak, and I share a little bit of my faith because it's just part of who I am.
Sure.
When I speak.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, faith in God was so important to us there, to everybody, and our leaders had strong faith.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, the leaders there were so incredible because they the ones that bore the brunt of the torture, and they made the rules, but then they had to go first to test them.
Mm-hmm.
Time and time again, and they just kept bouncing back and standing up tall and leading with honor. Our mission was to return with honor, and these people led with honor, and I want to honor them as I speak and as I share from the book.
As a matter of fact, today, when we finish this conversation, you're off to address someone on a military base, right?
That's right, here in Dobbins Air Force Base in Atlanta,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think my personal mission has focused, as a leadership consultant now for 15 years and a coach, is focused on bringing freedom to the captives.
Wow.
Because we're all captive to some degree.
Right.
Something is holding us back from the past, some message that we believe, some habits that we have, some behaviors that we do that are holding us back. So my goal is to free people to climb to the next level,
mm-hmm.
to lead at the next higher level, and they have to get freedom. And I literally can see, not literally, but in my mind and experience, I can see shackles falling away from people as they get freedom from things that have been holding them back, and now they're leading in a much more free condition.
Well, Lee, it has been a pleasure talking. We've known each other for a number of years,
mm-hmm.
and it's good to get reacquainted again, and so excited about Leading with Honor, this book. But as you look back over this unique life that God has led you through up until this point and how he's using you now, is there a scripture verse, is there one of the principles from the book that you want to close with today?
Well, I'll just tell you, Psalm 1 was very important. I had that memorized, and of course, Psalm 23, had those in Psalm 100, I had those memorized. So those played a lot in my head. And then Romans 8:28, being able to know that regardless of what happened, you know, God was going to be with me and that we're going to get through it and come through somehow. And I don't understand all that. I just know by faith I believed. And I believe that you must believe. Without belief and without faith that you're willing to step out and take action on, we're pretty powerless.
The book, which Lee has written, is titled Leading with Honor, Leadership Lessons from the Hanoi Hilton. It was an honor to talk to Lee, and through our conversation, honor veterans everywhere. If you are a military veteran, thank you for your service. If you'd like to follow up today's interview and learn more about Lee and his book, please visit firstpersoninterview.com. Lee is also in demand as a speaker, and you'll find the information you need at firstpersoninterview.com. And then if you'd like to see what's coming up in the weeks ahead on this program, we've published the schedule online at the same website, firstpersoninterview.com. Next week, we have a special report from my recent visit to eastern Ukraine. We'll be talking with pastors and church leaders and refugees from the war there in eastern Ukraine and giving you a firsthand report. Now, with thanks to my friend and producer Joe Carlson, I'm Wayne Shepherd. Join us next time for First Person.